Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hi there, everyone. My name is Deb Karen. I'm your host of Culture Crush RX, where we explore what makes a great company culture and chat with local business leaders about how we can cultivate a healthy and productive work environment. And today's conversation is going to be very interesting. I'm really excited about who we have in studio today. I'm joined by Michelle Sirocco, the Chief Social Responsibility Officer with Televerde, which is a really incredible organization that provides education and career opportunities for incarcerated women, both while they're in prison and after release. Michelle has some really cool stories that she's going to share with us today. And then we also have in studio Justin Yendes, the owner and lead investigator with Arizona Investigative Associates. Also some cool stories to share because you have worked on some very high profile cases. So we're going to dive into some interesting stuff, maybe get a little bit off of our culture talk here and there, but I think this will be a really great conversation. So I'm going to give you both an opportunity to introduce yourselves in a little more detail. And we like to start with, what was your very first job? So, Michelle, do you want to kick us off?
Wow. My very first job was when I was 13 years old. I sold tickets for the Maricopa County Mounted Sheriff's Posse over the phone under the table.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
So much irony in all of that.
There is.
That's awesome. So tell us, just give us a little bit more on Televerde. I think this is an amazing organization. I didn't really do it justice. So can you give us the little elevator pitch on what it is that you guys do?
Yeah, Televerde is a business-to-business sales and marketing agency that helps small, medium, and large companies, particularly in the technology space, get new customers. We pride ourselves on the fact that we deliver meaningful results for our clients. Specifically, we've delivered over $8 billion in revenue for companies like SAP, Marketo, and Adobe. But the really interesting thing about our company is the way that we go about doing it. We have 450 women working for us inside of the correctional facilities, both here in Arizona and Rockville, Indiana. Five of our nine contact centers are located in the women's correctional facilities. And the company is a company that was founded on purpose. So it wasn't that we were a call center who said we wanted to go out and find cheap labor and we started to contract with the prison to give us prison labor. We are the original founder of the company, was involved with prison ministries, and he looked at the situation and felt that there was something fundamentally wrong, that we were not preparing the women to be successful after their release. And he actually had been in the call center business. So he started a call center inside the prison, and this was 1994. And then he met our co-founder and former CEO, Jim Hooker, who came to the business with a background in technology sales. He was a former IBM sales executive. He'd built and sold a couple of computer businesses. And he looked at the situation and believed that we could, by training the women to be successful in sales in the technology space, he could build a successful business and enable the women to build marketable skills that would lead to a meaningful, rewarding career, particularly enabling them to be not just financially independent, but to be financially successful. Because he believed that, and I think as we all know, that anybody in sales, a really good salesperson, will make more money than anybody else in the company. And so he felt that teaching them to be successful in sales would enable them to have a career that would help them be financially independent upon their release. But more than that, be financially successful and able to care for themselves and care for their children in an industry that was less likely to be discriminatory against them because of the fact that they had a felony conviction.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And then the connection that I made here with you and Justin is you were talking about how, I think both of you had shared the same comment to me, but could you imagine if you were judged on those, the 5 minutes of bad decisions you made in your life and therefore denied a lot of future opportunities? So I love what you guys are doing because, as I've said to both of you, I do think that a lot of times it's just that people haven't had the best opportunities in front of them. And so they're human beings. And I think we all have a lot of great potential inside of us. So I love that you guys are doing that. And let's jump into Justin, how that ties into you and what you do. Give us a little background on your business.
Sure. My name is Justin Yentis, and I've been a private investigator since about 2007. I got into the field, honestly, private investigators come from various walks of life. Here in Phoenix, there's some of our most notable PIs are former law enforcement, a couple of them. There are a few, you know, Rich Robertson, who came out of the media, Lou Ruggiero, who was also with, I believe, Channel 12. I came from banking and finance. Back in the late 90s, I lived in South America. I was a missionary in Venezuela for several years and picked up Spanish and spent, you know, several years living in the local community, getting to know folks. I got pretty skilled at interviewing and finding people in rural locations. That was before Venezuela has, you know, recently had a pretty severe downturn. Wouldn't be able to go there now. But in 2007, a former police officer, a friend of mine, wanted to start a PI agency. And so he contacted me and asked if I would partner up with him. And we started our firm at that time. We do primarily criminal defense work. Private investigators get hired for anything from cheating spouses to missing heirs to finding missing children. I've been contracted to locate jewelry that was stolen. But the great majority of our work at this point is capital defense. So we work with a good chunk of the capital defense attorneys that operate in Maricopa County, preparing their cases for trial.
Yeah.
Not only do we look at the guilt innocence phase of a case to determine whether or not someone is guilty of a capital qualifying crime, but then we also, in a capital case, the case is divided up into several portions, primarily the guilt phase and then the penalty phase. In that penalty phase, once someone has already been found guilty of homicide or a capital qualifying homicide, we have to put their life in perspective. So it's our job to locate information and witnesses and documents that can really shed light on who this person was. And so that's the great majority of the work in capital work is showcasing what someone has lived up until that point, what put them in the scenario where that crime was committed, what type of life they lived, so that the jury has a full understanding of who this person is before they pass judgment on them.
Mm, yeah, it's powerful. I think because, you know, you shared with me recently one of the more notable cases that you've worked on. And I think when it's a case, especially when it's in front of the media, and I think you both can probably speak to this, there's a lot of armchair juries.
There are.
Judgment passing. But like I've said, I think there is a lot of opportunity with folks and not always capital crimes. But in the ladies that you work with, Michelle, is there, you know, I mean, obviously the hope is that they are going to be out of prison and living a fulfilling life past that. And you had shared some statistics with me, a tough word for me every time, about your recidivism rates. Can you speak a little to that and how your program has helped ladies stay back in the real world and thriving?
Yeah, so that's really what we pride ourselves on is not just the fact that they're learning skills and working and taking care of themselves while they're incarcerated, but they're learning marketable skills for when they get out. And then we provide them with job opportunities to come work at our corporate office once they're released. And we have a nonprofit foundation that does job placement for them at companies around the valley so that they can get a job, get on their feet, and move forward. And it's through that effort that the women, we believe, is what makes them successful in staying out of prison. Mm-hmm. And so of the 3,000 women that have worked for us over the past 25 years, we have less than 7% recidivism rate. And for those of you that don't know much about recidivism, the three-year average in Arizona is currently 37%. The national average is that 83% of people will go back to prison with a new charge within 9 years. And so this less than 7% that we have for our 3,000 women is over a period of 25 years. So it's about changing their lives, but it's also changing about the lives of their families and their children. And, mm-hmm. It has a generational impact as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can both probably speak to that in that 87%. That's pretty huge. Do you think that does point to a lack of opportunity?
Well, I think the issue is multifold. In Arizona, a lot of the careers that people can get require licenses. You know, if someone wants to go out and become a barber or get a ROC license to become a contractor, you know, any type of major landscaping, you know, they're going to have some sort of license. And a lot of these careers are run by boards that check into felony convictions. In Arizona, there's no expungement. So there are some criminal felony charges that can be set as misdemeanors, but the great majority of them, once they're on the record, they're always there and they're always findable. So when a guy or a lady gets out of prison, you know, if they've been in for 10 years, they don't have a lot of opportunity to go out and apply and put on an application that they don't have a felony conviction or, you know, even come in with a lot of training to do something. You know, I had a client that was, he did about 10 years for a drug related case. It was an organized crime related individual. And while he was in prison, he was reading, he was going to Bible study. He was doing a lot of great things, but then he got out and he didn't have any opportunity and he got picked up for, you know, drug dealing within 10 months.
Right. And that probably is because you have to live. And if that's the only path that you can find.
One of the things I say, there's a lot that I can comment on about what you said. What you were talking about is the licensing, is that that's what we call collateral consequences. There's 47,000 collateral consequences to a felony conviction in the United States. In the state of Arizona, there's over 840 that are very specific to the types of licenses and careers that you cannot have after you've been convicted of a felony. The idea that if somebody goes into prison and they're unemployed, uneducated, and unskilled, and we release them in the same way, there's nothing else that we can expect. The other side is that if they go into prison and they do have the opportunity to get an education, to work in some type of a job that would develop skills that may be marketable skills, when they come out, they go to apply for a job. And they have to check the box on the application that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And then they're arbitrarily just excluded from the opportunity. So there are actually 23 million people who have been convicted of felonies in the United States. And the unemployment rate for that population is 25% greater than the national average. So we're regularly excluding qualified candidates from the workforce just simply by asking them to check the box. And that's a big kind of thing that I've been on lately. The Society for Human Resource Management Professionals worked with Charles Koch Institute, to do a study that said, and I don't know the statistics on this particular one right off the top of my head, but it was somewhere around the number of 60 to 70% of HR managers didn't have a problem with hiring and felt that these were just as qualified candidates, right? HR managers, but hiring managers didn't have the same perception. And so SHRM has actually just opened up a pledge where they're just asking all employers to agree to give all qualified candidates a chance. Right. Let's let people get to the table, be part of the interview, and then let's hire people because they're qualified for the job, not because of what they did in the past.
Right. Right. And so really naive question. But, you know, a felony, like you were saying, I mean, sometimes I don't want to be like, it's just drugs. But if it's just drugs, I mean, that's not a violent person. That's somebody who probably was entrepreneurial or, you know, I mean, there's some other ways to spin that.
Possession of marijuana in Arizona is a felony.
Right.
It's also approved for
medical use.
Medical use. So I'm not approved for medical use, but if I was to have marijuana, I could be convicted of a felony for it. So there's a wide variety of them. There's a lot of things that occur in people's past that haunt them forever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And like you said, for 5 minutes or, you know, one little thing that doesn't define you.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's amazing what you guys are doing. So in the prisons that you work with, and please correct me if I say anything like, you know, not in the proper language. I want to respect all of this. But are you working typically with, you know, what are the crimes that most of these gals are in for?
Well, to be honest, we practice a don't ask, don't tell policy because everybody has their own perceptions, right? We all have our own internal biases that might make, you know, I might feel one way about something and you might feel completely different about it.
Yeah.
However, what I can say is that 86% of all people in prison in the state of Arizona are there for something related to substance abuse. It's either a crime, it's either possession, distribution, sale, manufacturing of a substance, or it's a crime that they committed while under the influence, such as driving under the influence, wrong way driver, or something that they did in an effort to get drugs. So fraud, credit card fraud, checks, so things that they may, or even burglaries that they may have done to get access to drugs.
And then on that point, the way the Department of Corrections, they classify their inmates based on a lot of different factors. But I would assume that this is the same at Perryville. In the male prisons that I visit quite often, they're designated from anywhere from a level 2 yard to a level 5 yard. And so a lot goes into what designates your dangerousness level. So if you're a great model citizen or model prisoner, I should say, model inmate, you could, you know, earn your way to a level 2 yard based on, you know, the type of crime you have, your history, your write-ups during prison, and you can work your way up or down based on whether or not you get in trouble. So the inmates that are on the lower yards, the more minimum security yards, they have a lot more opportunity. I would assume those are more of the people that would be in these type of trainings. And you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but they would have a lot more opportunity because they're going to get out and they're going to be doing shorter times. And they're behaving themselves while in prison.
Yeah, that's correct. We actually hire from both the minimum security and the medium security yards at Perryville. But we have one kind of requirement that aligns a little bit with it is that they have to have less than 10 years remaining on their sentence. Mm-hmm. And that's because we want to be able to provide as many women as possible with opportunities because it does represent opportunity for them and their families to have a better life when they get out of prison. So we want to make sure as many people as possible get to take advantage of that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So touching on this, the whole idea of company culture, which is kind of one of my passions and why I've even started this show. Let's speak to your clients that you work with, the people that ultimately hire these gals. What's the perception there? And how do you guys work with them to say these are very qualified folks that you actually want to have on your teams, you know, now and in the future?
So it's an interesting question, and it's changed significantly over the years. When I first started my career as a sales rep with the company, and I was selling the product or selling our services in the late 90s, early 2000, when I would tell people about the business model, they would have a very, very negative kind of reaction to it.
There's preconceived notions there, for sure.
There was this idea that these people would never be smart enough or never be capable enough to represent their product effectively. So back then, we would say, you know, just come visit our call center and meet the ladies and see the team in action, and then you decide, right? That was kind of the approach. Now, 20 some odd years later, it's completely different. And it's different because the world is a different place. It's one in two people have an immediate family member who is currently or formerly incarcerated. So that means that this problem of mass incarceration really touches everybody in some way. So people's minds are much more open, and I think people are much more considerate and thoughtful because they know a family member or a friend or a cousin or something that has gone through some sort of experience.
Humanizes it. Yeah.
But candidly, one of my absolute favorite things to do is to take somebody out to the contact center, and everybody goes out there and they tell me they've never been to a prison before, and I'll ask them what they expect, and everybody always tells me, oh, I don't have any expectations, and then inevitably as the day progresses and they sit down and they talk with the ladies and they meet the team and they see the work that they're doing, I just see their eyes light up, and it's a complete change in the way that they think and the experience that they have. And as people sit there and have a conversation, they realize either that could be me, or that could be my sister, or that could be my own mother or my own daughter. Mm-hmm. And it changes everything. I recently took the CEO of Marketo out to visit, and very powerful man, you know, $300 million company that he's running, you know, and within 20 minutes of our time there, he says to me, he just says, wow, wow, wow. and he said, Michelle, I'm speechless. He said, I am a man who is never speechless. 10 minutes later, he says to me, he goes, I have to admit, you have forever changed my view of the world. The next thing he said was to his chief revenue officer. He says, Eric, he said, how many business development reps do we have at our office in Denver? And the answer was 125. And he said, give me one reason why I don't fire them all and give all that work to Televerde, because these women are exponentially better than we have ever had in our own office.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It really is. What do you think points to how you are creating that, and, you know, why are they so much better at that role?
So there's I think, a lot of elements that go into that. There's one, if you could imagine being at the worst point in your life, you know, you're at absolute rock bottom and you've been kind of set on the sideline to go do some time. Fundamentally, you're going to start to think about, what am I going to do differently? How did I get here? And how do I change? And how do I get better? So that's the first thing, is that there's this desire to want something more, to have a better life, to change, to get back what you've lost, to get your children back.
Right. Perspective.
Yeah. And then there's a pay it forward model that occurs, particularly with the women. So it starts with, and the girls tell me this story, a lot of different girls from different walks of life and different contact centers will tell me very, very similar versions of this story. They'll say, you know, when I got here, I was broken and I wanted to figure out how I was going to fix my life. And then I looked around and there was some women here that were different. They carried themselves different. They had more confidence. They were very articulate. They were very positive. They were motivated in what they were doing. There was just something different about them. And so I wanted to know what they had. And I wanted what they had. And so then I went to talk to them and I found out that they worked for Televerde. And then they encouraged me and coached me to get me to apply for the position and helped me get there to be able to get the interview, to get accepted, and then to learn the skills that I needed to be successful. And so it's this combination of desire, support, help, and
gratitude. They end up very grateful for that opportunity, I think.
Gratitude. And also there's a whole role modeling thing. Because we've had 3,000 women who've worked there, we have women who have gone before them, who've gone on to be successful. So they can hear stories about, and they can meet, because the women go back in on a regular basis. They can meet women who were once in their shoes, who have now, who are now, you know, an executive at some company. They've bought a house. They've gone to college. They're sending their children to college. They've gone on vacation to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And you know, the regular thing that's said is, look, there's no difference. There's no difference. We're all the same, ladies, you know, and so the belief that they can be successful and that this is a platform that will enable them to be successful.
Well, it's great that they have that support system. And I've noticed that with a lot of the inmates that I've worked with, you know, we'll have a guy that has come off the streets. He was raised by gangs or passed around in foster care, or you know, really just never had a family or someone around them to guide them, to support them, to, you know, to encourage them. And, you know, we get into their cases in capital work, you know, those will take 4, 5, 6 years. And, you know, there's a whole team of us working. We all kind of become a family and we see these guys flourish. You know, these are people that have been charged with heinous homicides and very horrible crimes, but you know, to have people around them that will support and encourage them, and to, you know, have hope and desire to make the best out of their current situation moving forward, you really see folks come alive. And and it's just fantastic that there's organizations out there that will facilitate that as they get back out into society, because that is so important that they maintain that support once they get back out into society, so that they can continue on the good path that they're already on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as human beings, we all have a need for connection.
Exactly.
And I think quite often, probably in the case of some of these folks that you're dealing with, they didn't have that growing up. And that's how they ended up making these mistakes and getting into these situations where now they find themselves, you know, in this situation. Mm-hmm. Michelle, I want to bounce back to, you were saying, you know, there's an application process and how they become part of the Televerde team. What percentage of the ladies in prison actually have the opportunity to work for you? Or, I mean, how many of them are you? I'm curious about that, because it's obviously, it must be competitive. And what other opportunities do they have aside from what you're offering?
So anyone can have the opportunity to come work for us. I mean, fundamentally, there's no discrimination. There's things that they have to meet in order to be able to. First, they have to have a GED or a high school diploma, which is really the first starting point. Many of the women get there and they don't have that. And so the first thing they do, then they find out, oh, this Televerde thing, I have to get my GED. So they go about the path. And
they can do that while they're in prison.
And getting their GED, which I, from a personal standpoint, I believe in many cases, that's where, that's kind of the first step in life where things went wrong, right? That's that's the first turn off the path was you either dropped out of high school or you didn't graduate for some reason. And one of my favorite stories, I was going out to visit one of the centers one day and I'm walking across the prison yard and this girl comes running out of the visitation area and she's waving a piece of paper and she says, hey, you're the Televerde lady, aren't you? I turn around, I said, yes. And she said, well, I just got my GED and I'm coming for your job. I said, baby, it's all yours.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of the first thing. Then whenever we're hiring, when we have capacity, so we here in Arizona, we have 300 women that work for us. And so there's always people who are getting released. That's an ongoing thing. That's positive attrition. So every couple months on each of the yards, we'll be hiring and doing a new hire class. So we post the application. The DOC does a little bit of a screening, mostly to make sure that they're disciplinary free and that they have their GED and that they have less than 10 years and they have more than a year. Mm-hmm. And then they go through a process just like any other job. So they have to take a typing test. They do a written summary. They do a face-to-face interview. And they do some computer-based skills testing. And then we pick the ones that kind of meet the criteria. In some instances, we'll have 20 or 30 people are applying. Some instances, we'll only have 5 or 10. But we pick the best of the group. We stay with relevant training size classes also that meet the needs of what we're trying to do. They go through 2 weeks of classroom training that is accredited by Rio Salado Community College for 6 credit hours. They like to call it a mini boot camp, where they learn business acumen, technology skills, sales skills, marketing, demand generation, things that they need to know in order to be successful. And then they go into working on the phones with a mentor and a coach. And then that goes on for a period of about 2 to 4 weeks before they're certified to go on to a client campaign. It's an opportunity that's available for everyone. They just have to, they've got to be willing and able to do the work necessary. So sometimes a gal I was talking to the other day, she said she had to apply 5 times. And she wasn't going to apply the 5th time. And her friends on the yard were like, you've got to do it. You just got to do it. And she got the job. She's been with us for 1.5 years now. And she's getting out soon and looking forward to the opportunity to come work at our corporate office.
That's really fantastic.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, Justin, I know that yours, you know, you're typically defending capital crimes. And the last one that we talked about, you were working on, you know, the guilt is established, but working on what the penalty is. And explain to me some of those differences. And, you know, when Michelle's talking about they need to have, you know, less than 10 years, because obviously then there's an opportunity for growth beyond that. When you're working with your clients and you're working on all, you know, hoping that they'll get a better penalty, or I'm not framing my question very well, but as far as, you know, you're looking for potential for them to probably contribute again, and they're not always going to be people that are working on life sentence versus death penalty, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Just talk a little bit about what are the things that go into showing that person, you know, that, like you said, putting their life in context and how they're going to improve while they're in prison and maybe lessen their sentence so that then they can come out and have these opportunities and be a little bit reformed and contribute to society.
Sure. Yeah. And the level of cases that we end up working on, they do tend to vary. I think, you know, on the smaller end, I once worked a case. It was a theft of $43, and
wow. That somebody was really wanted that $43.
They really did. They really did. that was a postal worker, so it ended up in federal court. But so that was, you know, on one end of the spectrum. The
can
other
imagine
end,
hiring you was worth the $43.
Okay. Well, you know, the postal inspector's office got involved, and the U.S. attorney's office. So it tends to escalate from
yes.
there. You know, the phrase "making a federal case of it," you know, comes from somewhere.
Right.
So, you know, that was on one end. We've defended folks that were charged with auto theft, with aggravated assault, sexual related crimes. Even, you know, during the late 2000s, there were a lot of cases involving mortgage fraud that we were all, it seemed like everyone in town had a stack full of mortgage fraud cases that we were all trying to work simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end, we've done cases involving organized crime, drug smuggling for different organizations, both north and south of the border, in Arizona and in New York. We've done some pretty interesting cases over there.
Yeah. Have you done, you know, wrongful accusations?
We have. Yeah. My company, we do some volunteer work with the Arizona Innocence Project, the Justice Project. And so what we do is we go and help them with interviews or with investigation to support the potential or the investigation into wrongfully accused folks. So we've got a couple of those that are going on right now. We work also with the Hawaii Justice Project, doing some work for them, doing investigations for their clients. Hawaii has a good number of their inmates housed here in Pinal County.
Really?
They do. They contract with Corrections Corp. Well, I believe it's called Core Civic now. It's a private prison, and they house their folks there. So we have a pretty wide array of cases that we've worked on. The capital cases, when someone is charged with a capital crime, it's the county attorney's office takes a look at the crime and they see if it's extremely heinous or if it qualifies under one of the several capital aggravators, crimes against children or murder for hire, witness elimination, torture. These really disturbing crimes, they will send for capital review. So when we get a case like that, we always start by looking at the guilt of the person, whether or not the evidence is there to convict a person of that crime. And for those cases, we'll bring in forensics experts, we'll bring in computer experts, cell phones, blood spatter, anything you can imagine. We've probably hired an expert to analyze it. We use DNA experts in state and out of state to review DNA evidence. And that all goes into the determination of whether or not the person is guilty of the homicide.
Okay.
After that, and simultaneously, we work doing what's called sentencing mitigation. And so as part of sentencing mitigation, we take a look at the entire life of a person.
Right.
And as an example, we have a client, her name is Rebecca. She is now out at Perryville doing a couple decades, and she was charged with homicide. Rebecca was on camera shooting her husband in the head. So at the onset, there was more evidence than we normally get in a case. After that, and this is all on camera, she lit a cigarette, sat down on the couch, waited a while, called 911. And this was all caught on camera. So I worked on that case for several years, working to get information that would help Rebecca get a sentence that was fair. What I determined was that she had come from a very broken home. She had been sexually abused by a member of her church out of state, and she was ostracized by her family and the other church members for being the victim of sexual assault. She was then essentially sold into sex trafficking. She was in various abusive relationships with various men in several states, and ended up in Arizona working at a gentleman's club, but it was a strip club. She was then picked up by a patron of that club, and this is a guy that had some means and moved in with her. They moved in together, were married, but he was also very, very physically and emotionally abusive. The reason why the homicide was caught on camera is because the man had locked all of the doors in the house with locks that couldn't be opened from the inside, and had cameras in every room so he could watch her to make sure she couldn't escape. So on the onset, when you would see this in the news, Rebecca Doe kills, XYZ person on camera, the comments on, Facebook and on the news posts are just heinous.
Right.
But when you take a look at where she came from and why she ended up in that position and how many times she called out for help, she was headbutted right here in Tempe, about 3 miles from where we're at right now, in front of a off-duty Tempe police officer and tried to not press charges, telling the police officer that this man would kill her eventually. And
this is not really that uncommon of a story, though. Maybe not to that extreme, but
it's not that uncommon at all.
Yeah.
In fact, there's one of the TED Talks by a girl named Erica Munoz, who's at Perryville as well. She tells a story, and her pitch is hashtag not me anymore.
Mm.
Because she's very, very similar story of all the things that led up to her ending up in prison.
Right.
But it's all stemmed from the sex trafficking problem.
That one thing that's, in this case, caught on camera becomes that definitive moment when you're putting it is much more powerful when you put that context around.
You've got a woman that has been tortured and abused and used and beaten for her entire existence.
Right.
And has been dropped into the situation where she is held captive. She's got a young son that I'm still in contact with. He's on the outside. He's in the foster care system. And she didn't have a lot of options. Now, no one is going to go out there and say, you know, that what she did was the best possible option. But knowing the entirety of what she experienced in her life, it puts the shooting in perspective. It's not just a homicide out of anger or jealousy or anything else. This is a damaged person that reacted in the way that made sense to her at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she'll be doing, she was represented by Jennifer Wilmot. Jennifer did the Jodi Arias case. And so we had worked on that. And now, you know, after that case had finalized, I had asked Jen if she would take on Rebecca's case, and we ended up resolving that one as well.
Yeah.
Jennifer has worked a lot with women who are higher profile accusees.
Yeah.
and did just a fantastic job with Rebecca's case. We were really pleased with the 22-year sentence that we ended up with.
What was her possible alternative?
Life.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the death penalty.
Yeah.
And when we talked a little bit about this, I'm really naive about a lot of these things as far as, and like you said, the comments on, they're out there, the comments on social media and AZ Central, you'll always see that, like you said, take them out back and just shoot them right away.
Right.
But when we're uneducated about it, like I am myself, it seems like, well, wouldn't the death penalty cost less? Or, you know, there's all these factors that people consider in that. But I mean, you clued me into not necessarily, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love that there are, you know, there's programs that can help these folks. And
they're
just wounded people.
Yeah. I would love to see Rebecca in this program, honestly.
I'm sure she will be at some point.
After a couple more years, once she's in that 10-year range, because she's a bright, bright girl, and she had a lot of potential, and she loves her son. And, you know, her son's out out in foster care right now in a group home. And, you know, he loves his mom. And
he's going to be a grown man, right?
I mean, he is.
She's got 22 years.
He is. Yeah. He is.
So that's the one thing that I would say that is the biggest driver for Televerde is kind of our stated purpose, mission, vision, values are about providing people with life-changing opportunities and unleashing the human potential that's within. Because there's so many women in there who have this innate potential that it's never been unleashed because of circumstances like what you're talking about.
Right.
And so giving them that platform to overcome their past, learn new skills, get out and go on to be incredibly successful.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I'm sure you might have women in your program who would say that going to prison ended up being the best thing that could ever happen to them because now they're provided with this opportunity.
Well, yeah, almost everyone who has gone in and come out to be successful and put their lives back together will tell you, I am who I am today because I once wore orange,
right?
Because it gave me the opportunity to restructure my life and take on something new.
Yeah, considering that their path led them to where, you know, to there, had they not ended up there, they'd still be on that path.
Yeah.
Or dead, mm-hmm. or worse, or, you know, wow, it's powerful stories for sure. Yeah. So, in that those time frames, like you, this gal that you're speaking of, because we have to get down to that 10-year window before they're provided with the opportunities at Televerde, what do they have for resources in the meantime?
Honestly, I'm not 100% sure what all is available on her level of incarceration. You know, I've got a client right now in max custody over in Florence that has faced several charges over the years. He's a guy that I've represented probably four times in the last 10 or 12 years. But he's studying right now for a psychology degree. He's doing a lot of correspondence work. We've been talking quite a bit. I talk to him about every 2 or 3 weeks just to encourage him and to tell him to keep going and to talk about his plans after. And he'd like to get out and do some prison and gang consulting and be an expert witness once he can get out and get his, you know, get his life going again. He's done with the prison life. He's already been in, you know, 20 of the last 40 years or so. And so there are some opportunities for them to study and to gain some work skills. You know, there's classes and courses that the DOC does allow, and then there's several of the colleges that'll do some correspondence work. I'm not sure what all Rebecca has available to her at this moment, but definitely there are groups and training within the facilities that they can attend.
Yeah. There's a wide variety of programming groups, education. There's not enough anywhere to get people what they need to be successful when they get out. Although the DOC and DES have implemented a career center at both the men's, women's, and the men and women's prisons to help people that don't have opportunities like they have with Televerde to get jobs and prepare for jobs, job skills, resume writing, and things that they need to be able to get jobs when they get out.
So there's
a lot of work going on. But I think one of the things that's different about Televerde compared to most of the other prison jobs is it's really about developing a marketable skill in a country where we've really moved to an economy of knowledge workers. We need to fill the pipeline of people, right? Women in tech, women in revenue, men in technology, right? We need to fill that pipeline of people by providing them with skills that are relevant for jobs that they can get where they can make money. Because I recently read an article that it was in the Denver Post. So Colorado has massive prison overcrowding right now, and they're trying to figure out, do we open another prison or do we figure out how to reduce the population? And so one of their ideas was that they have 50% recidivism, and if they could reduce that recidivism rate, then they could reduce the population. And the article specifically stated that what they planned to do was to prepare and provide prisoners with unskilled jobs when they were released, because they thought that would keep them out of prison, which goes directly to the idea of what you were talking about earlier, right? Now you've got a job, but it's not enough money to live on. It's not enough to take care of your children. It's not enough to take care of your family. You're not proud of the work that you're doing. And so you're going to go back to what you know, which is, you know, dealing drugs or burglary or whatever it is. And so that's what creates this cycle of recidivism. So it's about skilled jobs.
And giving people purpose, right? Something that feels meaningful.
Right. Well, yeah. I just read a stat from LinkedIn. They surveyed 34,000 people who said that they wanted purpose in the work that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And 45% of them were willing to prioritize purpose over pay or title.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's true. I mean, I want to get up in the morning and feel like what I'm doing is contributing to the greater good of something.
Right.
So the idea of providing people with, it was unskilled jobs in agriculture.
Right.
So I think getting up in the morning and going and picking cotton or whatever their idea was, it's not sustainable for somebody's personal morale.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think they have to be, you know, they have to have something that they're passionate about. But, you know, this guy that I was mentioning, you know, he started reading psychology books. It must have been, gosh, about 5-6 years ago. And just having something that he was interested in and passionate about and curious about and that he could feed his mind with, you know, it really gave him a lot of hope. And as the years progressed and he started enrolling in correspondence school and he saw his end date nearing, you know, he gets out in another, I believe, four or five years. He really knew that he could get out and do something that he was drawn to. You know, it wasn't just going and filling a paycheck. He was really interested in making a mark on the world and going out and speaking in, you know, high schools and speaking in schools to kids to help them to avoid the mistakes that he had, mm-hmm. that he's made. So I think, yeah, if you can give inmates, you know, the ability to move into something that they are interested in and passionate about, I think you've got a winning situation there. Now, politically, there's always these roadblocks because, you know, there's, you know, prison is supposed to punish offenders. It's supposed to protect the public. And so there's often pushback from the general public of, you know, for programs within the prisons to help prisoners get to a better life.
Well, I think the difference is punishment versus reform.
Exactly. Right? And if we want to have low recidivism rates and if we want to actually have the Department of Corrections correcting behavior and correcting and helping citizens to move from the life that they were in before, you know, pay for the crimes, but then move into a new life, then we're going to have to think outside of the box and not just stick people in cages and, you know, wait 10 years and hope for the best when they get out.
Yeah. When you put it that way, yeah, it's just not logical.
It's really not. When someone knows drug dealing and they know gangbanging, that's what they know and that's what they're going to continue to do in prison and that's then what they're going to get out unless that behavior can change.
Right.
And it can, but we have to think of this as an opportunity to reform and educate and correct bad behavior and help these people get into society again, because that's going to save, tax dollars. It's going to save families. It's going to, the amount of benefit that would give to our community mm-hmm. would just be astronomical.
It is astronomical. And that's actually one of the things about Televerde that we've calculated. And the estimate is that fundamentally, just by keeping the women out of prison with our 7% recidivism rate, it represents a $25 million a year savings to the state of Arizona, because Arizona currently spends about $1.1 billion a year on incarceration. And so by keeping these women out of prison, that's a savings to the state. And then the fact that now they've actually become productive members of society with an income, there's also, you know, the positive economic impact that's having when they're buying houses and buying cars
right.
and contributing
it's
to society.
Amazing.
And then one of the other things that I talk about all the time, and you work with the men quite a bit, and people regularly ask me, you know, well, why not the men, Michelle? Why not the
men? That was going to be one of my next questions.
I know. I just figured I'd preempt the question because it's always coming. The first time I was asked that question, I was like, But the reality is that 66% of, well, 4 out of 5 women in prison have children, and 66% of those children are under the age of 18. And depending on what study I look at, those children are anywhere from 3 to 10 times more likely to go to prison themselves.
If their mother is imprisoned.
Well, any incarcerated.
Okay. Parents.
Child.
Okay.
So particularly the mother. So the overwhelming number of those children, when the mother is released from prison, she's expected to take those children back.
Mm.
It's not, the men aren't being expected to come out and get the children from grandma's house or auntie's house or get them out of foster care. But the women are. And that's what they're striving to do. And so the men have significantly more programs in prison than the women do. The women are a little bit of a forgotten population. It's the same thing, gender bias.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many more men in prison than there are women. Everybody's giving them opportunities. So that's one of the reasons why we're there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this is another one that I just came across a couple days ago, is in Texas, the men have 27 career choices that they can get trained and certified in before they get out of prison, including they can get MBAs from the local universities. At the same time, the women only have available to them is 2 certifications, one in culinary and one in office administration. So they can cook or they can type. My reaction to this was, oh my goodness, what year is it?
I know, I was going to say, this is 2019, right?
So the women, are neglected. And I don't know that it's so much of a discrimination thing as it's just there's such a smaller population of women. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason why we're there. But the other is that we believe if we fix the woman, we can fix the family. Mm-hmm. Because when she gets out, if she's financially able to take care of her children, right, then she'll be able to do that. Then the children will be less likely to go to prison. And as she moves on and progresses her life in a positive direction, the man's either going to come with her or she's going to make him get out. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the reason why we've focused on the women.
That's awesome. I'm glad you answered that question for me. Yeah, it really is. So what are the growth plans for Televerde? I mean, we talk about this and I'm like, this should be everywhere. This should be how prison works.
I want it to be everywhere. In fact, my personal platform is that if more businesses would get behind and do what Televerde is doing, and that is to provide jobs, training, and education to people who are there while they're incarcerated and opportunity for them after they're released, then we can put an end to this mass incarceration problem. Televerde specifically, our goal is to provide 10,000 life-changing opportunities within the next 10 years. So we will be expanding into additional prisons here in the United States. We're going to be opening up in the UK in Manchester before the end of the year in a women's prison.
Is it similar there as far as
I went to visit and you know what? It was exactly the same. Mm-hmm. The women were the same. They had the same problems. They had the same mm-hmm. challenges. They wanted a better life. They just had a different accent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. This is all really mind-opening stuff for me. This is a great conversation. We're getting close to the top of the hour, believe it or not. So, Michelle, can you share a little bit about where people can find more information on Televerde? And if there are companies out there that might be listening that would be interested in working with you, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, so you can go get more information on our website, www.televerde.com.
It's one L, right? T-E-L-E?
T-E-L-E, yeah.
V-E-R-D-E.
Like a green telephone, making money with the phone.
Ah, there we go. I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, just Michelle Sirocco, and I can connect you with the right people to help you solve your problems. I recently did the TEDx event at Perryville, TEDx Perryville Correctional. You can search for that on YouTube, and there are some wonderful TED Talks of the women in prison and some great community leaders talking about what's going on.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch them all, but what I saw is really good stuff. Yeah. I love TED Talks anyway, but it's amazing stuff. So thank you for bringing that event to our community because I heard great things about it well before we connected. So yeah, really good. And then Justin, if anybody's looking for your assistance or services, how do they get in touch with you?
They're welcome to go to our website, azprivateinvestigator.com, or they can search for us on Facebook at our Facebook page under Arizona Investigative Associates.
Okay.
We're always looking for new people to work with. If you've got a friend or family member or loved one that is facing criminal charges and you want their story told to the judge or jury in full context, we'd love to sit down and meet with you and hear about what you'd like to share and who this person is and really present a good, complete view of their life to the person or persons that are going to be deciding their sentence.
Yeah. There's so much more that goes into being a private investigator than I realize. Like, you kind of have to be that psychologist and counselor and advice giver.
You really do. you really do. It's something I didn't realize when I started, but I've grown to love.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for sharing all these thoughts today. Hopefully some people do reach out. I think that this was a really, really fascinating conversation. So really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for listening in. This has been Culture Crush RX. I'm your host, Deb Karen. We are very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community. We hit your airwaves in partnership with Max6 and Conscious Capitalism of Arizona. And as always, I hope you have enjoyed listening in and we will talk with you soon.